It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 29 degrees under fair skies. At the airport, they are showing northwest winds at 8 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. Good flying weather. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for today and tomorrow. Northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour through the period. Mostly clear skies overnight and a low around 20 tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, a boil water notice was rescinded for residents in the Otmaloy Way area. An Alaska Native Corporation wants to develop a big new hotel in Homer, but some of the residents are concerned. The National Transportation Safety Board released a preliminary report on the plane crash on December 8th. And Sea Alaska Heritage has released new language learning apps in endangered indigenous languages. Those stories plus get your vaccination after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. President Biden says he is devastated to learn another American died at the hands of Hamas. Judy Weinstein was thought to have been held hostage, but today her kibbutz announced Hamas killed her on October 7th, alongside more than 1,200 people in Israel, including her husband. Health officials in Gaza say more than 21,000 Palestinians have been killed so far in the war, including 21 today in an Israeli strike in Rafah, according to a hospital director. Eyewitnesses say the strike hit a home where displaced Palestinians were sheltering. The Israeli military says it's looking into the incident. NPR producer Anis Baba reports a scene of chaos and bloodshed where victims are being treated at the Kuwaiti hospital.
The casualties and the wounded are keep reaching the ER non-stop. The majority are children and small babies. One of them was a pregnant woman and she was begging the doctor to check on her baby inside of her belly. The doctor told her, my priority is you now, not your baby. A woman with all of her face is just like covered in dust, the white dust, laying on the wall and just crying. Dead bodies all over the place. An ambulance just opened the doors. A small infant, all of his head is wrapped. From Rafah City, Anas Baba, the Kuwaiti hospital.
The White House says the U.S. and Mexico will cooperate to disrupt human trafficking and address the root causes of a historic migrant surge, including poverty. This after top officials met yesterday in Mexico City. Another U.S.-Mexico meeting is planned for next month in Washington. Mexico's president says a migrant caravan headed north has scattered. NPR's Ada Peralta has this report.
Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador says the number of migrants in the caravan has dropped to around 1,500. Some estimates had put it at 8,000 when it left from the border with Guatemala. López Obrador says President Biden called him earlier this month concerned that U.S. authorities were apprehending some 12,000 migrants a day at the southern border. López Obrador said Mexican authorities made moves, and now that number is down to 7,000 a day. He added that the U.S. and Mexico have reached important agreements on immigration, but he did not specify what. This year, Mexico has detained a record number of migrants, but political, economic, and social instability in several Latin American countries have continued to drive migrants north. Ada Peralta, NPR News, Mexico City.
Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley appears to be backpedaling. The presidential candidate told voters last night in New Hampshire the Civil War was about the role of government. She did not mention slavery, sparking a backlash. Today, she told a radio show, of course, it was about slavery. You're listening to NPR News. Two states have differed on former President Trump's eligibility to appear on their primary ballots. Colorado's Supreme Court says he can't because he engaged in an insurrection. But Michigan's declined to take up the case, meaning he can appear. University of Michigan law professor Barbara McQuaid explained.
In Michigan, there is not that same language that talks about being a qualified candidate to appear on the primary ballot. And so instead, this issue could be raised later if and when Donald Trump becomes the nominee.
The Supreme Court may weigh in. Russia is believed to have concealed how many people drowned after a dam exploded in Ukraine's occupied Kherson region. NPR's Polina Litvinova reports from Kyiv. The Associated Press has investigated.
According to the Ukrainian military, 16,000 people lived in the town of Oleshki at the time of the flooding. AP's journalists talked to local medical workers who registered dead there. They said 200 to 300 people drowned in Oleshki. The Russian-occupied authorities banned medics from indicating drowning as the cause of death and ordered volunteers to bury bodies. Many bodies were taken away to unknown places. The explosion destroyed the Kakhovka Dam on June 6th. Russia said 59 people drowned. Meanwhile, Ukraine's National Resistance Center has estimated the death toll just in Oleshki at 10 times that many. Polina Litvinova, NPR News, Kyiv.
And you're listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, dedicated to improving the learning experience for America's students by sharing what works in pre-K through 12 education at edutopia.org.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The boil water notice for residents in Antone Way, Otmaloy Way, Parkside Drive, and Cliffside Road ended yesterday. That's according to the City of Kodiak's Public Works Department. While the affected area falls outside the City of Kodiak provides water service from Monashka Bay to Gibson Cove. The boil water notice went into effect Monday evening after a car lost control on the ice and struck a fire hydrant on the corner of Antone Way and Razanoff Drive. Repairs were completed early Tuesday morning, and drinking water in the area has since passed tests with the state's Department of Environmental Conservation. The National Transportation Safety Board released a preliminary report yesterday about a plane crash near Anchor Point that resulted in the death of Kurt St. Jean and seriously injured Kristen Fenske. Alaska State Troopers reported Fenske died yesterday morning. The report stated that the plane, a Piper PA-18-150, was flying from King Salmon to Homer on December 8th when it crashed in the afternoon around 1:15 p.m. Investigators from the board retrieved video from the vehicle's dash camera that showed the plane spinning before the crash. While falling, the left wing appeared to be folded against the main body of the aircraft. After the on-site investigation, the board brought the wreckage to Wasilla. There, a board investigator and a structural engineer from the plane's manufacturer will examine the plane to determine the cause of the crash. Clint Johnson, chief of the Alaska Regional Office of the Safety Board, said the video indicates the left wing somehow failed before the crash.
We don't know what the initiating event was, but we're going to be centering in on the left wing at this point right now.
The investigation typically takes around a year to complete, but anything related to the aircraft's safety will be released immediately. An Alaska Native corporation is trying to develop a new hotel in Homer, but their proposal sparked public concern at the city's Planning Commission meeting earlier this month. KBBI's Jamie Deep has more.
Doyon Limited acquired an area of land at the base of the Homer Spit known as the Lighthouse Village back in March. The Alaska Native Corporation is planning on building a hotel development with the same name. The development consists of a four-story hotel and rooftop bar, a three-story employee housing building, and five triplexes. Doyon Chief Financial Officer Patrick Duke said the corporation is working to develop their tourism investments beyond the lodge in Denali National Park and their coach tour services. Duke said he thinks Homer would be a good place to invest in tourism for the South Central region.
It's an area that we both love, and it made perfect sense for us to bring what we feel is a world-class project to the city of Homer.
Doyon has submitted a conditional use permit request and a rezoning application to get the development site shovel-ready. The application would turn a forested residential lot into one for commercial use. The city would also have to vacate a right-of-way from B Street, located south of Bay Avenue. The city's planning commission hears the proposals and decides whether to make a recommendation to city council to adopt them, take no action, or to ask for changes to be made. Homer residents packed into Cole's council chambers in the Zoom meeting room during the commission meeting earlier this month to speak on these proposals. They brought up numerous concerns with the development, which mainly focused on its impact on traffic and the environment. Tammy Schrader said she's worried the project might exacerbate traffic issues in the area.
My biggest concerns are that we have our Saturday market, and as other people have testified as well, it's troublesome trying to get out of the farmers market and onto Ocean Drive.
As part of the application process, Doyon collected geotechnical data and completed the traffic impact analysis, or TIA. The TIA looked into the hotel's potential impact on two intersections located at the base of the Spit, including Catchmack Drive and Homer Spit Road. The report said that the hotel would not have a significant impact on traffic at these intersections, and recommended reducing demand for vehicles through enhancing non-motorized transportation, like bikes and pedestrian traffic. Resident Lane Chesley spoke out against the TIA's methodology. Chesley said the report used national data to generate its models that can't fully assess local traffic conditions.
I do think you are hearing a lot of local comment about traffic, and so I think it's important that you take a deep dive into the TIA and look at some of the assumptions that were made by the engineer to do that.
In their application, Doyon wrote about using sustainable practices and protecting the local ecosystem during construction. Resident Glenn Seaman says he's doubtful.
I mean no disrespect to Doyon, but if you look at their team, an architectural team, I looked at it very carefully, there's not one biologist on that team. You'll see nothing in the narrative that substantiates what they're saying in terms of biology.
Other commenters brought up concerns about losing access to wetlands south of the development, chemicals found in the soil analysis, and the size of the space between the development and the adjacent neighborhood. If all applications get approved, Doyon plans to begin construction in 2024 and to complete the development by 2026. Due to time constraints, the commission moved to continue discussion on all of Doyon's proposals to a special meeting on January 3rd at City Hall and on Zoom. In Homer, I'm Jamie Deep.
With the holiday season well underway, local health officials encourage residents to incorporate some precautions for seasonal respiratory viruses. Bartlett Regional Hospital spokesperson Aaron Harden says that by taking care of individual health needs, people can take care of the community's health as well.
It's a good reminder to just, you know, continue to take reasonable precautions, stay home when you're feeling sick, and keep up to date on your vaccines. And that really helps keep both the healthcare system and ourselves as healthy as possible.
Contagious viruses like COVID-19, the flu, and RSV continue to hit households in Alaska this holiday season. According to data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, over 20 people were admitted to hospitals across the state with confirmed cases of COVID-19 this week.
We had an early rise of respiratory illnesses, particularly flu, in the community of Juneau that really mirrored what we kind of saw happening at the statewide level. But fortunately, that didn't translate to higher admissions here at the hospital.
There is still a way to get COVID-19 tests for free, but it might take a little longer than a walk or drive to the local pharmacy. This fall, the federal government revived its program to offer free tests through the U.S. Postal Service. For residents looking for vaccines, most pharmacies and healthcare providers have the most recent COVID-19, flu, and RSV vaccines. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute released new language learning apps in Khadkil and Shumalgiak this month. The apps are the first of their kind, opening doors to learning the endangered indigenous languages. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has more.
Leah Urbanski with Sea Alaska Heritage Institute demonstrates a new games app. It lets you choose which language you want to practice, Tlingit, Khatkil, or Smalyak. Urbanski picks Khatkil. Her phone screen fills with animated sea creatures.
So it's all kind of live animals floating around the screen. And then whenever you click on it, this guy just pops up out of nowhere.
A harbor seal pops up in the corner of the screen, looking at us. When Urbanski taps on it, the Khatkil word pops up, Khud. There's also a game with a forest full of birds native to Southeast Alaska, a quiz game, and a few more games on the Tlingit side. This app, and two others released this month, are SHI's first to put Khatkil, the Haida language, or Smalyak, the Tsimshian language, in app form. The other two are learning apps for each language, much like the Tlingit one SHI released several years ago. They have phrases like this in Smalyak.
Where are the abalone shells? Dadu tiga bilha.
As well as vocabulary.
Snowing.
Yeah, madam.
And a breakdown of the alphabet, with recordings to help learners pronounce each sound right. The Khatkil voice you're hearing is Skil Jade Linda Shrak, and the Smalyak is Shigop Alfie Price. Price and Shrak worked with a team of language experts to make the apps. The Khatkil and Smalyak apps are a bit thinner in content than the Tlingit app right now, but Urbanski says that will change.
For right now, this is what we have, but we're going to continuously keep adding to this as we go along, just gathering all the kinds of vocab that we need. Let's see if this works.
Ferret. Dayat.
She says these apps are another way learners can engage with the endangered languages.
I think getting language out there in as many ways as possible is important, especially with our ever-evolving world. I think technology is one of the things that a lot of people use.
Apps are especially helpful for younger learners, she says, and they're all free to download from app stores on iPhones and Android devices. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Sitka climate scientist Elizabeth Bagley has been helping to develop an unconventional tool in the fight against climate change. KCAW's Meredith Reddick has the story on how a new game could help build awareness about a global issue.
On a clear evening in Sitka, a group of friends hunched over a dining room table are reeling from a dieback in the Amazon rainforest. The Earth's temperature has just risen by a tenth of a degree Celsius, and it looks like a hurricane is on the way.
Ocean acidification, so we lose 4 oceans.
Oh no!
The group of friends is playing Daybreak, a new game released by designers Matt Leacock and Matteo Menapace, to play global superpowers, represented by the U.S., China, Europe, and the majority world, work together to alleviate the climate crisis before the Earth's temperature rises by 2 degrees Celsius. Players win as a team by reaching drawdown, when no net carbon is going into the atmosphere.
So what does that mean? So does that mean we have to play it over this one or something?
Elizabeth Bagley is peering with furrowed brows at her board, which is labeled Majority World. She's trying to figure out if she can offload some dirty energy while still meeting demand. Across the table, her husband Justin generously tosses a couple of China's excess clean energy tokens to the Majority World. The game was released just last month, but Bagley has been playing a version of it for the past 2 years as a beta tester. Bagley is a climate scientist with Project Drawdown and a former children's game designer for the company Leapfrog. She learned about Daybreak after giving a talk about her career trajectory to a group of young professionals.
One of the people in the audience emailed me and said, "Hey, given your background in climate solutions and your background in gaming, you might be really interested in this game by Matt Leacock." He was assuming I knew who Matt was. I mentioned it to Justin, and he said, "Wait, Matt Leacock? As in, like, the most famous cooperative game designer in the world?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I think that's the same guy."
Leacock, who is most well known for the games Pandemic and Forbidden Island, didn't initially intend to create a game about climate change.
I've been hearing all sorts of news about the climate crisis and wanted to know, you know, what I could do about it. And I wanted to better understand it. And like one way I looked at the problem was like, well, maybe I can learn about it and turn it into a game.
Early prototypes of the game took upwards of 3 hours and involved a lot of calculation.
They would take, I think some of the early ones would take like 4.5 hours to play. And you had little whiteboards that tracked a lot of different statistics for your world power.
The Bagleys received an early prototype of the game in winter of 2021. With a camera and microphone set up on their dining room table, they recorded their gameplay. Leacock would review the recordings and send back changes. A few new cards here, a minor rule change there.
Matt would ask us things. He would watch our playthroughs, and he would say, okay, I want you to play again, but I want you to take out these cards. And he would say, I'd like you to play again, but I want to see what happens when it's just two people, and I want you to play as these countries. And so he was using us he was giving us specific guidance around what he wanted to see.
Sometimes they identified cards that were too powerful.
Justin has really kicked butt playing Stratospheric Soul for the past, right, Justin?
Well, they changed the card.
Well, because you dominated so much with it.
The final version, which the Bagleys have unboxed for the first time tonight, is much more streamlined, with vividly colored tokens and cards and no whiteboards in sight. Leacock says simplifying the game without sacrificing accuracy was a big challenge.
You know, I mean, there were hours and hours and hours of discussion and debate about, like, a single card, like how best to represent the risks involved and the effects and how good it should be and, you know, how would it really play out in the system, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it was kind of fun to kind of geek out on that stuff. But then also you have to remember that, you know, it's a game.
Input from playtesters like Bagley, as well as a host of scientists and social workers, helped shape key parts of the game. But while years of research went into the development, Leacock didn't want Daybreak to feel like homework.
The way we approached it was that we'd get a bigger audience and have a bigger impact, and more people like were intrinsically motivated to play it. You know, they weren't like, oh, let's eat our broccoli now and learn about climate science. You know, they you know, selfishly wanted to have a good time in the evening.
It's a bold move to try to condense a global, multifaceted problem into a cardboard box, but on this Thursday night, the group of players is deeply invested and optimistic about winning, and Leacock considers that a win.
Because if all you do is read doom and gloom, then you just kind of feel helpless. And here we're painting like, hey, here's this possibility. We're not saying it's going to happen, but you as the players are given agency, and then hopefully that feeling of agency can bleed off into the real world.
We would like your attention, please.
Yeah.
we are able to get rid of our building emissions.
I'm going to give you guys one green energy.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice.
That's what I can
this
do.
This could be good. Okay, so we're thinking about if we get rid of our building energy.
Bagley, who has just signed a global offshoring agreement for the table, is also optimistic.
I think that's a great lesson, is that all of us have a role to play. And there's no one right way. There's lots of ways that we can stop climate change. And the best thing to do is start. And if starting means playing a game with people you know and love, then that's a fantastic way, because even talking about climate change is a great step in the right direction.
Just a few notches short of the 2-degree mark, the group abruptly and somewhat surprisingly reaches drawdown.
Amen.
The climate change crisis has not won, at least for today. In Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
And in perhaps the most exciting news, the city of Kodiak will be presenting fireworks over the Kodiak waterfront on New Year's Eve this year, first time in over a decade. That's happening Sunday, December 31st, New Year's Eve, at about 7 p.m. They're shooting them off from the spit, and therefore they're going to ask for a 250-foot perimeter around the area where they will be setting the fireworks off.
Mortgage rates are down, but the real estate market is not yet perking up. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute. There were more lockbox openings in November as house hunters reemerged, but not more contract signings. The National Association of Realtors pending home sales index was unchanged from October. That's despite the average rate on a 30-year mortgage falling half a point. Boeing is telling operators of certain 737 MAX planes to check for a loose bolt in the rudder control system. That's according to the FAA. Two planes have been found with a problem. Democratic Senators Richard Blumenthal and Ed Markey are urging Tesla to recall vehicles with defective components after a Reuters report of frequent failures in steering, suspension, and axle parts. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 28th day of December, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:54. It will set again at 4:28. That will give us 6 hours and 34 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 58 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was 60 degrees, set just back in 2021. And a record low was 4, that was set in 1970 and in 2011. Currently 29 degrees under fair skies. It's a nice day. Northwest winds at 8 miles per hour at the airport, where they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day today and for tomorrow, too. Clear skies overnight, high near 30 for today and tomorrow, with northwest winds 10 to 15 or so throughout the period. On Saturday, look for a chance of rain and snow, then rain after that. Mostly cloudy on Saturday with a high near 37, west winds to 10. And it looks like that kind of weather through Wednesday or so at least, starting Saturday. So enjoy the sunlight. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen at 2:14 p.m. and be 9.9 feet, followed by a low tide at 9:10 p.m. of minus 9/10. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 2:44 this afternoon and be 15 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 9:39 p.m. of minus 1.7 feet. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory today with northwest winds to 20, becoming northwest 15 tonight. 8-foot seas coming down to 6 feet tonight. And for tomorrow, east 15, except northwest 20 north of Dangerous Cape with 6-foot seas. Friday night, southeast 20 and 8-foot seas. Saturday, southeast 20 and 9-foot seas. And Sunday and Monday, watch out, southeast 40 with 21-foot seas starting on Sunday. In the Shelikof, north 15 today, seas to 3 feet, variable 10 tonight with 2-foot seas, and on Friday, northeast 20 and seas to 5 feet. For Friday night, look for it to come up to northeast 25 with 5-foot seas, northeast 20 on Saturday with 5-foot seas, and Sunday and Monday in the Shelikof, east 40 and 11-foot seas. For your inshore waters, Chiniac Bay, northwest winds to 15 today and seas to 3 feet. For tonight, northwest 10 and 2-foot seas, and for tomorrow, northwest 10 and seas to 2 feet. Saturday, north 10 and seas to 4 feet. But in Chiniac Bay Sunday and Monday, again, the weather's coming in there too. Southeast 35 and seas to 15 feet in Chiniac Bay starting on Sunday. In Marmot Bay, northwest 15 today and seas to 2 feet. Northwest 10 tonight with 2-foot seas, and northwest 10 tomorrow with 2-foot seas. Nice day in Marmot Bay today and tomorrow. However, on Saturday, look for northeast 15 and 3-foot seas, and Sunday and Monday in Marmot Bay, east 35, seas coming all the way up to 15 feet. And for those in boats in the offshore waters out in the Gulf, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, 15 to 85 nautical miles offshore, small craft advisory through Friday with north winds to 15, except northwest 25 north of Dangerous Cape and 9-foot seas. For tonight, variable 10, except northwest 20 north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 8 feet. And for tomorrow, southeast 15, except northwest 20 north of Dangerous Cape with 8-foot seas. Sunday and Monday, offshore, look for southeast 45 and seas up to 25 feet out in the Gulf starting on Sunday. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. The meeting is open to the public, and the packet is available at the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. The Borough offices and all other Borough facilities will be closed to the public on Christmas. The Audubon Bird Count, Chiniac Narrow Cape Count, is coming up on Saturday. Help count birds for science during Audubon's 124th annual Christmas Bird Count. Join thousands of participants who will be part of the world's biggest and longest-running wildlife census, contributing to an invaluable data and to bird population research. The Kodiak Audubon Society would like to invite bird watchers to participate by helping with the Chiniac and Narrow Cape Bird Count. That's happening December 30th, Saturday. Birders of all ages and abilities are welcome to contribute. The compiler arranges volunteers into small parties who will follow assigned routes, counting each bird they see. Some people just watch bird feeders instead of walking along routes. Interested field birders and feeder watchers must arrange with the count compiler in advance in order to participate meaningfully. To sign up for the Narrow Cape Chiniac Count, contact Robin Corcoran at 907-654-0997. You can also email Robin at robincorcoran, R-O-B-I-N-C-O-R-C-O-R-A-N, at yahoo.com. And AMSI is conducting a fishing vessel's drill conductor course. That's happening Monday and Tuesday, January 8th and 9th. So not this coming up Monday and Tuesday, but the next one. It goes on from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center over on 118 Trident Way on Near Island. The cost for the class is absolutely free for Kodiak Commercial Fishing Fleet and $225 for all others. The class meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. And, in fact, you will learn about cold water survival, dewatering pumps, immersion suits and PFDs, abandoned ship procedures, man overboard recovery, EPIRBs and signal flares, mayday calls, how to inflate and use a life raft, firefighting techniques, helicopter rescue, emergency procedure drills, and flooding and damage control. It's all very useful. I've done it myself, and it's well worth doing. Again, that's January 8th and 9th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. over on the Near Island Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center. To register, call them on the phone at 907-747-3287, or you can register online at the AMSI website. That's at www.amsea.org. That's AMSEA. And the Angels of Love program is still going on at the hospital. Place your loved one's name on an angel for display at the hospital holiday trees. That's displayed in the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. It goes through January 13th. You can honor the life of someone you miss, celebrate the life of someone you admire. $10 donation for each angel. You can do that just right at the hospital admitting desk or the specialty clinic reception desk or online at www.kodiakhospitalauxiliary.org. Coming to the end of the year, it's a great thing to give to. All donations support the Hospital Auxiliary's Healthcare Center Career Student Scholarship Fund. And Season 10 of The Galley Tables is going on, and coming up February 2nd, The Truth is Out There.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.